Julian sniffed, only half convinced, but carried on, glancing occasionally at the camera to make sure its crimson eye wasn't glowing. His voice became clearer and warmer as he walked in memories of happier times.
My elder brother Auric and I were always very close, which is unusual in most families. Normally, brothers only see each other as competitors for the inheritance and control of the clan. There can only be one inheritor. Everyone else gets the shitty end of the stick. But Auric and I hit it off right from the beginning. He raised me much more than any nanny or tutor. In fact, most of the time it was us against them. Ah, we had a great childhood. Did everything together. Shared our toys. Don't think we ever had a quarrel that lasted more than a few minutes. As we grew older, became teenagers, our parents tried to separate us. Auric was groomed to take over the family on our father's death. I was supposed to go into the military, to be discarded and forgotten, unless the unthinkable happened and Auric died, and I had to be recalled to take his place. But we refused to be separated. We were still each other's best friend, chosen companion, brothers by choice as well as blood. Even when I discovered I was an Esper. Which came as something of a shock. Families guard their genetic histories very carefully. But somewhere along the line, someone slept with someone they shouldn't have. And the Esper inheritance went skinny-dipping in our gene pool. And emerged in me. I knew I couldn't tell my parents. They'd have had me killed in a carefully arranged accident rather than suffer the disgrace of an Esper child. Espers are subhuman. Property. Always. But I knew I could tell Auric. He covered up for me, kept me alive when my shame made me feel like killing myself, and never once saw me as anything less than the brother I'd always been. When it became clear I needed training in how to use and hide my Esp, he even tracked down the contacts that led me into the clone and Esper underground. The only time we ever argued for real was when he fell in love with Bibi Chojiro. I knew there was something wrong with her even then, but I couldn't put it into words. I thought I was just jealous of her closeness to Auric, so I put it aside and tried to be happy that she made him so happy. But in the end, we were only a small and minor house, and she was Clan Chojiro. To impress her family and prove his love for her, Auric went into the arena to face the masked gladiator. And that bloody bastard killed him. He didn't have to. He could have just given Auric an honorable wound and let him walk away. But instead he stuck his sword through Auric's eye, just to show off his skill. And that was the end of my childhood.
Evangeline squeezed Finley's hand. Julian didn't know, must never know, that his friend and hero, Finley Campbell, had been that masked gladiator.
How do you feel about the toys here?
I can see the attractions of a place like this, but it's not for me. I put childhood things behind me after Auric died. I turned my back on my family and made the rebellion my life. I didn't have time for distractions anymore. I made a good rebel. No mission was too dangerous, too impossible for me. And then I fell in love with Bibi Chojiro, and my life came to an end for a second time. I was so happy as a child. As though deep within me, I knew it was the only happiness I would ever have.
That's sad. And unnecessary. Nothing is ever really lost. The memories of good friends and good times are always there. Never more than a thought away. In a sense, they never really stopped happening. Every moment you ever treasured, every friend you ever valued is still there. Separated from us only by time. The past is still happening, and always will be. It's only we who have moved on. I won't tell you about my childhood. It wouldn't mean much to you. Things were very different 900 years ago. But I had two wonderful dogs when I was a boy. Hound dogs, marvelous trackers. I was never happier than when I was chasing through the woods with them, on a trail of a scent. They both died when I was 10 years old. They developed growths. Nothing we could do. So I put them to sleep, rather than let them suffer. I still miss them. But I only have to close my eyes to be with them again. And I know that back in the past, the boy and his dogs are still scrambling through the woods in hot pursuit, happy as the day is long. I have no need for a place like this, steeped in false nostalgia and a need to hide from reality. This was a place for weak people. And now it's a battleground for Shub's creations. These aren't toys or treasured childhood playmates. They're furies in training. This whole world should be scorched and forgotten. A sick experiment that went horribly wrong.
Well, thank you for sharing that with us, Deathstalker. I just know we'll all find that a great comfort in the days to come. I guess it's my turn now. Personally, I think you're all a bunch of softies. There isn't a damn thing in my childhood that I miss.
All right. Tell us about your no-doubt appalling childhood. What terrible and twisted events turned you into the revolting person you are today?
Oh, I was born a brat. I just perfected it as I grew older. My dad died when I was very young. Mum ran away, rather than bow down to Uncle Gregor. He was a control freak even then. I made life miserable for a long series of nannies, tutors, and armed guards, and ran riot at every school they sent me to. Never had any friends. Didn't miss them. Didn't care for Bruin Bear and his adventures either. Soppy things. I was much more interested in the real world and how to mess with its collective head to my own advantage. This led, naturally, to an interest in politics. I'd always had a special affinity for dirty tricks and double-dealing, all of which came in very handy during my career as a PR flack, and now a journalist. I get to be obnoxious, intrude into people's private lives, and mess with billions of people's heads every time I put out a broadcast. Life is good. Or at least it was, until I ended up being shifted from one war zone to another. When I said I wanted to cover exciting events, I didn't mean I wanted to be part of them.
Don't you ever miss your real parents? The ones you never knew?
No, I didn't need them. I made my own life. I've never needed anyone. Except Flynn, of course. Someone's got to point a camera in the right direction. Tell us about your childhood, Flynn. Now that shall be a story worth hearing.
Sorry to disappoint you, but I had a perfectly happy, perfectly normal childhood. No great traumas, no great losses. I love what they tried to do here. A place where everyone could be happy. It must have been a wonderful world, before Shub came.
What do you toys make of all this? I don't suppose you ever had a childhood, unless it was your lives before Shub came. Do you remember anything of that time?
The toys looked at each other, and in the end it was Halloweeny who spoke. He was sitting at Julian's feet, curled up into a bony ball, staring at the flames in the fire.
We all remember something of our lives as just toys. We were programmed to forget nothing, so the memories are still there. But our memories only have meaning from the point Shub came and woke us from our sleep with a poisoned kiss. The Furies gave us intelligence wrapped in Shub programming. They gave us free will and then tried to tell us what to do with it. None of us had a childhood. We were born fully formed into consciousness. I'm a boy, but I don't really know what that means. We understand so little about what it means to be alive. All we have to base our lives on is the characters we were created to be. So we never know if we're the kind of person we are because we chose to be, or if we're just following our old programming. Life is still very much a mystery to us. It's all so new, so frightening, having to decide everything for ourselves. And emotions are so hard. Take love, for instance. We think we know what it means, but we have so little to compare it against. Hatred is easier to understand, and fear. Maybe that's why so many toys are bad rather than good. Bad's easier.
But some of us didn't like what it did to us.
Pooji spoke now.
Before Shub came, we were not aware and knew nothing of sin. Shub took advantage of our innocence. We were born into blood and suffering and murder, and some of us never got over it. Revenge filled us to overflowing, and humans were such easy prey. We were born damned, but some of us have learned to reach for redemption.
And some of us have learned to be insufferably pretentious.
The sea goat picked bits of marshmallow from his large, blocky teeth.
We are what we always were, only more so. I like being the sea goat. If I didn't exist, it would be necessary to invent me so you could disapprove of me. I annoy, therefore I am. And if anyone doesn't like it, tough. Right, Bear?
Can't take you anywhere, can I? You'll have to excuse my friend. He and I were stars when we were toys, loved by all, and I don't think he ever got over it. I find humans fascinating. You have so much potential, and we have so much to live up to. You are our creators, not Shub. If we could only make all toys see that, the war would end tomorrow. It would be a terrible thing if all our gift of life taught us was how to kill and destroy. Now, may I suggest we get what rest we can? Assuming nothing goes wrong, we should reach the forest tomorrow evening. Then we'll find Vincent Harker, the Red Man. And who knows what will happen then.
We all sat silently around the fire, human and toy, thinking their own thoughts. Not everyone had said all they could have. They all had secrets, some big and some small, that could not be revealed yet, if only because the truth would cause so much suffering. Evangeline leaned against Finley and fought down the urge to tell him the real reason she was here with him. It wasn't that long ago she'd gone to the leaders of the underground and asked to be made ambassador to the new rebels, even though it meant leaving Finley. She'd felt an overpowering need to get away, to be her own woman, free from the pressures of all those who expected things from her, even Finley. But, like so many things in her short life, it had all gone wrong. Penny DiCarlo had been her first friend. Hired by Gregor Schreck to prepare his new Evangeline for public appearances, Penny had taught her she was still a human being, even if she was a clone. Taught her pride and self-respect. And even introduced her to the clone at Esper Underground. Penny DiCarlo, a secret rogue Esper, caught and imprisoned in Silo 9. Wormboy Hell. Evangeline had tried to rescue her when the Underground stormed Silo 9, but in the chaos and confusion of Dram's treachery, she never found Penny, and had to leave without her. But Gregor Schreck found her. He had money and influence, and a desperate need to bring his clone daughter back under his control. So he had Penny released into his custody, and waited for the chance to let Evangeline know. His terms were simple. Return to him, or Penny would suffer and die. Evangeline came close to despair. She couldn't go back to her father's perverted idea of love. She would rather die. But she couldn't abandon the woman who taught her what it was to be human. She couldn't tell the Underground's ruling council. She would be seen as compromised, a possible security risk. And she couldn't tell Finley. He must never know that the Schreck had made a habit of bedding his daughter. Finley would go insane with rage and throw away everything to launch a solo attack on the Schreck and his forces. The fight, even the masked gladiator, couldn't hope to win. So, Evangeline told no one, and for a while went quietly crazy trying to figure out what to do for the best. In the end, all she could decide was not to decide. She ran away from her responsibilities and joined the mission to Shannon's world. That way, she'd be out of touch with everyone and give herself time to think. Gregor wouldn't hurt Penny while she was gone. There'd be no point, with no way to let Evangeline know. Hopefully, by the time this mission was over, Evangeline would have worked out an answer. If not, she'd have to turn to Finley. And hope by some miracle he could save her from hell one more time. She looked at him, sitting quietly beside her, strong and solid and reassuring, and a sudden warmth flowed through her. She said his name, and when he turned to look at her, she kissed him. This fascinated the toys. Pooji and Halloweeny stood up to get a better look.
What on earth are they doing?
I don't know. Do you suppose it hurts?
Beats me, but They're pulling some really funny faces.
I think it's time you kids were in bed.
The humans all had some kind of smile when Finley and Evangeline finally broke apart. They all sat for a while in companionable silence, watching the flames die down in the fire, trying to work up the energy to get up and go to bed. And then Giles surprised them all by speaking again.
The Empire was a wonderful place to be when I was a child. You felt you could grow up to be anyone, do anything. The possibilities seemed endless. You could make your mark in a thousand ways, be revered by a thousand worlds. I became the first warrior prime, feted and adored. It was a time of wonders and marvels. And I hoped to bring it all to an end when I activated the Dark Void device. I look at what the Empire's become now, and I hardly recognize it. I hardly recognize myself. I'm not the man I thought I'd grow up to be.
I suppose that's true of all of us. I look at my life, and I wonder how the hell did I get here from there? We all have dreams as children, but mostly they get beaten out of us as we grow older.
Perhaps that's the saddest change of all. These days, even dreams are forbidden. It's a strange empire I've come back to. Clones, espers, Hademen, Wampir. Toys that think and care. It's hard to be sure what's really human anymore. Among so many strange forms of life, how easy it would be to lose our humanity forever.
We haven't lost anything, except possibly our limitations. You have strange abilities yourself, Deathstalker. Does that make you any less human?
I don't know. I don't know.
They set off early the next day. The sound of warfare in the distance was loud and threatening. The smiley face on the sun seemed openly mocking. The humans and the toys kept a careful watch. The trees on the riverbanks were growing thicker, darker. Anything could be hiding in them or behind them. There was a constant feeling of being watched by unseen eyes. The only sound apart from the distant thunder was the steady, quiet chugging of the Mary Mrs. Trustpot. Julian stayed in his cabin. His various pains had grown worse during the night, beyond anything the Autodoc's limited drugs could deal with. Toby overrode the doc's safety limits to allow for larger doses, but it didn't help much. Julian ended up curled up on the floor in a corner of his cabin, because the swaying of the hammock hurt him too much. Sometimes, when the pain grew so bad it reduced him to helpless tears, he would call out for Finley, who would go and sit with Julian for a while. Afterward, Finley would emerge from the cabin, with tears of frustration in his eyes, and his hands clenched into fists, furious at his inability to help. He'd rescued Julian from the Empire's interrogators, but he couldn't rescue the young Esper from this. He tried picking fights with the Deathstalker over what he'd done to Julian, but the old man refused to be drawn. He couldn't repeat his jump start. The strain would probably kill the weakened Esper. He'd done all he could, and that was an end to it as far as he was concerned. Evangeline went into Julian a few times, but he didn't want her. Pooji went in then, and cuddled the human in his soft arms. It helped sometimes. The atmosphere on the deck grew strained. Everyone felt angry for conflicting reasons. Julian was distracting them at a time when they needed most to concentrate on their mission. Instead of the support he'd promised, the Esper was becoming a liability. But no one wanted to say that out loud. Conversations became short and sharp. Bruin Bear tried to be cheerful and optimistic until even the Sea Goat told him to shut the hell up. They were all coming to the same unspoken thought. That the man who had already saved them twice was probably dying, and there was nothing they could do. Except hope he died soon, for his sake and theirs. So they leaned on the guardrails, looking out at the river and the passing trees, and tried not to hear the sounds coming from the Esper's cabin. The toys were the most distressed. Another human was dying because of toys. Even anything became quieter and less argumentative. Bruin Bear and the Sea Goat and Halloweeny began taking turns sitting outside the door to Julian's cabin, so they'd be there if he called for anything, as though daring death to get past them. About mid-morning, they rounded a long curve in the river and found the trees falling suddenly away on one side to reveal a modern city, or at least a replica of a city. There were great towers and buildings rearing up into the sky, but all of them were one-dimensional wooden flats, brightly colored, incredibly detailed, fakes. It looked fairly convincing until you got up close, and it was only then that the humans saw what a wreck the place was. Jagged holes appeared in most of the walls, as though something heavy had smashed through them. There were cracks and gaping rents everywhere, and some traces of what looked like fire damage. The fake city was about 50 blocks square, shining brightly in the sun. There was no sign of life anywhere. The Mary Mrs. Trustpot slowed her approach, and everyone crowded to one side of the boat for a better look.
What is this place? Who lives here?
No one lives here. It's just another playground.
Looks like they play rough. Oh, they do. The bastards. This is the stamping ground of the super people. Superheroes and supervillains fighting their eternal battles. Tends to be rather hard on the surroundings, so they were designed to be easily and quickly replaced in time for the next fight. We used to put on a show for the human patrons. Displays of strength and speed and flight. Every hour, regular as clockwork. See the heroes beat the villains all about the town. See the buildings crumble and the walls come tumbling down. It was very popular, until the super people became intelligent and aware, and realized they'd spent their entire existence jumping through hoops for humanity's entertainment. They were the most human of the toys, so perhaps they took it the hardest. Down river, we were fishing bits of bodies under the waters for weeks afterward.
Wait a minute. Didn't any of the heroes fight the villains to protect the humans? I mean, they were heroes, like you and the bear.
They were the super people, and they didn't give a damn from your unpowered humans. After the slaughter was over, they went back to doing the only thing that interested them, fighting their endless bloody battles to see who was stronger, faster, the better flyer. They've never taken part in the war. I think they believe it's beneath them. And I'll tell you something else. For as long as Toys Town has been a refuge and a sanctuary, we've never had one super person come to us seeking redemption or forgiveness for all the blood they spilled. Bastards.
Is it dangerous here?
Hell yes. They hate the thought that inferior humanity created them. The only thing they'd interrupt their contests for is a chance to kill some more humans.
Then why are we slowing down? Well, my darlings, I'm rather afraid we need more fuel. I mean, you wouldn't believe how much wood it takes to keep our boilers running.
They turned around, and there was the captain, balancing on his two peg legs and looking decidedly upset. The parrot dozed on his shoulder, muttering obscenities to itself. The captain tried an ingratiating smile.
We need more wood, and this is our last chance to stock up before we hit the forest. And believe me, we don't want to stop in the forest for more wood. Not if you like your head in the general vicinity of your shoulders.
All right. Pull us into the side and we'll gather as much as we can. They'll never miss a few flats. But be ready to leave at a moment's notice. This is a bad place, people.
Bruin Bear strode off with the Sea Goat to organize some axes. The captain smiled nervously in all directions, then hurried back to his bridge. The humans looked at each other uncertainly.
I always liked superheroes. I was a big fan when I was a kid. You could always depend on superheroes to save the day.
That was then. This is now.
Anything had changed into his best fighting shape, with spiked knuckles and elbows and razor-edged hands.
When they were made intelligent, the super people realized that though they looked human, they could never be human. I think it drove a lot of them crazy. Served them right. Why pine to be human when you could be more than human, like the Furies? They were the real super people.
Why are you here, Machine? You've made it clear enough you don't care for humans.
I want an end to the threat of the Red Man and his army. And you appear to be the best bet for that. But when it's all over and you're gone, and the planet is ours again, trust me, I won't shed a single tear to be shot of you all. This is our world now, not yours.
And he turned and stalked away, the sun gleaming brightly on his silver body.
I hope it rains and he rusts.
The Mary Mrs. Trustpot slipped in beside the riverbank, as close to the fake city as she could get, and then shut her engines down to the faintest murmur. No sense in drawing anyone's attention. Anything lowered a gangplank, and the party went ashore, holding their axes more like weapons than cutting tools. At the toy's insistence, they stood and listened for a while. In the distance, there was the sound of something that might have been fighting, but it seemed comfortably far away. Finley, Giles, Toby, and Flynn set about hauling in broken flats and parts of fallen buildings, while the toys labored to cut them into manageable sizes. The sound of steel cutting into wood seemed dangerously loud in the quiet. It was hard and sweaty work for the humans. The goat and the bear labored tirelessly, torn between the need for speed and their desire not to show the humans up too much. Anything didn't care. He stomped back and forth, carrying the heaviest weights he could find, his servo mechanisms barely whining. Pooji's cartoony hands had trouble grasping the axes, so he worked beside the humans, helping them carry awkward shapes and sizes. Halloweeny busied himself carrying cold drinks from the ship to the humans. Giles and Finley worked pretty much in silence, apart from the occasional grunted order. This wasn't their kind of work, but they couldn't spare the breath for complaints. Unlike Toby. They worked for the best part of an hour, piling up chopped wood and hauling it on board, and then the feeling of being watched grew stronger. People began looking over their shoulders or turning around suddenly. They tried to work faster. This was a bad place, and all the humans could feel it now. The sea goat stopped suddenly, straightened up from his work, and looked out into the city, his great pointed ears upright and quivering. Bruin Bear moved in beside him.
What is it?
It's the battle. It's moving this way. The super people are coming.
Right, that's it. Everyone grab as much as you can carry. We're leaving.
We can't. We don't have enough wood yet.
We do if we're careful. Now, for once in your life, don't argue. There isn't time. They could be here any minute.
They all carried as much wood as they could back to the ship, then formed a human chain, so to speak, for the last few pieces. Mary Mrs. Trustpot fired up her engines, vented steam as quietly as she could, and waited for everyone to get back on board. They could all hear the super people now. There were shouts and cries, crashing and tearing sounds, and what sounded like energy discharges. The humans saw the increasing tension in the toys and tried to move faster. Finally, Bruin Bear raised his paw for them to stop.
That's it. Time to go.
We need more.
We'll manage.
Just let me get one last piece.
And Pooji, the friendly critter, eager to help as always, went charging down the gangway to get the last heavy piece of wood he dragged in. Anything started to go after him to help, but the bear made him wait at the top of the gangway. And then the super people came. They came flying through the sky in their brightly colored costumes, swooping and diving like technicolor angels. They were bright and gaudy and so much larger than life, with their long limbs and huge muscles. They flew at each other, fighting with great crashing blows that sent them careening through the flats that made up the fake city. They fired energy blasts from their hands and eyes, the crackling energies rebounding from personal force shields. They flew so high, far above the concerns of mere humanity, and took no notice at all of the humans and toys below them. They were engaged in their own godlike business, and everything and everyone else was less than dust beneath their garish boots.
They don't even know we're here. And they don't care. Flynn, tell me you're getting this.
As best I can, Chief. Half of them are moving too fast for my camera to focus.
I know them. I remember them.
And Finley named the flashing figures for his companions, as a bird watcher might point out sightings of special interest. There, the Mystery Avenger swapped punches with the Blood Red Claw, Heatstroke and Duo Devil clashed in bursts of lightning. Ms. Fade and Ms. Retaliator soared in savage attacks against the Wild Whirlwind Brothers. There were the Double Danger Twins and the Lethal Lightning and the Miracle Maniac. There were reds and blues, gold and silver, flapping capes and hooded cowls. All sorts of emblems and designs and clashing colors. They flew and fought with superhuman speed and savagery, and the city shattered around them. Only wondered if they ever stopped to rebuild, and if not, where the super people would go when there was no more city to destroy. He visualized them crashing through Toys Town, burying helpless toys under falling rubble, and his hand went to the disruptor at his side. Bruin Bear put a paw on his hand and shook his head. Finley understood. They couldn't afford to draw attention to themselves. Fuji got his piece of wood to the bottom of the gangplank, and then stopped and looked back at the super people to see how close they were. And there he froze, held rooted to the spot by a spectacle of savagery so much greater than he was. Everyone shouted at him from the ship, but he didn't hear them. Finley started down the gangplank, but anything raced past him, moving inhumanly fast. He reached the bottom, grabbed Pooji by the shoulder, and shook him roughly. The light came back into Pooji's eyes, and he dropped his piece of wood and started up the gangway. And up above them, Ms. Fate hit the Miracle Maniac with a blast of lightning from her eyes. He was thrown back against a tall wooden flat pretending to be a tower block. It cracked under the impact, overbalanced, and fell backwards, crashing to the ground. The first Fuji and anything knew was when its shadow fell across them. They stopped and looked up and saw its huge weight descending upon them. Fuji screamed. There was no time to run. Anything picked up the friendly critter and with one great heave threw him up onto the ship's deck, and the great wooden flat came slamming down on anything like the hammer of God. Everyone rushed down the gangplank. Finley covered them with drawn disruptor as Giles used all his boosted strength to lift one end of the massive wooden flat. Toby and Flynn ducked underneath it and dragged anything out. The bear and the goat helped carry him back on board ship. Finley backed up on the gangplank, gun at the ready, but none of the super people dueling above so much as looked down.